From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation and around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, ancient stories and sun-worshipping civilizations with guest scientist Maurice Cotterell, who claims to have found also the Holy Grail, though he won't say too much about that tonight, and he'll explain why. I'll tell you, there is an absolutely bizarre story on the internet tonight. I'm just going to give you some highlights of it. I've checked around, and some of the people I've talked to say, we don't think this is true, we don't think this happened, but it's out there. Listen to this. An asteroid targeted by massive United States and Russian military forces with missiles that they launched and destroyed it. And debris over the weekend, apparently, rains down upon the entire northern hemisphere. Now, some of you have reported, though, over the weekend, because I got a lot of emails, that you saw meteorites and things like that all over the place Saturday and Sunday night. So this is a strange story indeed. But according to this internet report, speculation among many of the Earth scientists today that a joint effort by the United States and Russian space forces have successfully targeted, destroyed an immense asteroid that they say had been heading towards our planet. And again, let me emphasize, no one I've talked to has confirmed this at all. Everyone says, we don't think this story is true. It's on a website that is called whatdoesitmean.com, and we've had some of those stories on our hot stories before. And what this story takes is some actual real events, and it puts it into a story, and then she has added some other things to it. But once again, it's a bizarre story. It's all over the internet. I want you to know about it in case it becomes a news story tomorrow. But everybody I've talked to say not so. Tense moments today in the White House. President Bush was hustled from the Oval Office and into an underground shelter after a blip on a radar screen was initially mistaken for an aircraft entering the restricted airspace around the White House. The Secret Service determined minutes later that it was a false alarm. A flock of birds or reflection could have caused the blip. Officials say the investigation was ongoing. Vice President Dick Cheney also was moved to a secure location as Secret Service agents, some with shotguns drawn, cleared the area in front of the presidential mansion. A White House spokesman said the president was in the underground bunker for just a very short amount of time. He said he believed it was the first time that Bush had been taken to the shelter since September 11, 2001 attacks. President Bush has offered proposals to speed construction of nuclear power plants and oil refineries and boost sales of energy-efficient vehicles. Bush outlined his initiatives in his second energy speech in a week, reflecting growing concern in the White House that high energy prices are beginning to slow economic growth and undercut the president's approval rating, which is going down. Speaking to a small business group, Bush lamented that he was powerless to cut gas prices, saying, "I wish I could. If I could, I would." This problem did not develop overnight, he said, and it's not going to be fixed overnight, but it's now time to try to fix it. An 8-year-old boy, by the way, this is a little hero in Chile, took on a lion to save his little sister. His name is John Escovedo. He and his 2-year-old sister were at a circus. They were walking by the lion's cage when the door somehow opened. How does that happen, by the way? But the door somehow opened, and the lion tried to grab the little girl. The 8-year-old, John, immediately started hitting the lion until it let her go. His mother said when he saw what was happening, he started to punch the lion's paw until it let go of his little sister. He was so brave. The little girl is in the hospital now, recovering from injuries. Doctors say that her condition is not life-threatening, but they say that she would have been killed had it not been for her brother's intervention. How about that? In the state of Washington, very strange story. Two elderly men who had gone turkey hunting together died of apparent heart attacks just minutes apart. One was 78 years old, another was 70. Apparently what was going, one of the men got out of his pickup truck and chased a bird down an embankment. His other friend found him, collapsed, dying. He ran back to the truck to try to wave down other motorists, and he collapsed and died too. That's a weird story. The world's largest passenger plane, the Airbus A380, has landed safely, completing its maiden flight. The long-awaited test lasted almost 4 hours, with the A380 circling the Bay of Biscayne, France, before returning to base. The A380 took off from its production site in Toulouse with a crew of 6 and about 20 tons of test equipment. They wanted to be safe, though. What they did is they all wore parachutes, just in case, and they even built some kind of handrail that in the event something went wrong with the plane and it was, you know, going down fast, they were able to crawl on a handrail if they had to escape. This plane, by the way, the Airbus A380, is designed to carry 840 people. Now, that's big. Scientists, by the way, in Germany continue to probe exploding toads, a story we talked about a couple days ago. Now more than 1,000 toads have simply puffed up and exploded in a pond in Germany in recent weeks. Scientists are baffled. They have no idea what's going on. They've checked the water. There's no bacteria there, strange bacteria, no virus. But apparently what happens is these toads are expanding, their stomachs bloat, and then they get to the point where they just explode. 1,000 of them so far. And they think out there in Hamburg, it's the only place that it has been happening in the world. A tabletop experiment, by the way, created nuclear fusion, long seen as a possible clean energy system under laboratory conditions. The fusion, of course, and the energy was very, very low, but at least it's a step in the right direction. Fusion power has been touted as the ultimate energy source and a cleaner alternative to fossil fuels like coal and oil. The fossil fuels expected, they say, to run short in about 50 years. We're going to do a show, by the way, on oil, because in some regions on this planet, some of these areas where they thought the oil was done, it's being replenished. And they can't figure out why. Well, we're going to talk to some experts about that. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website under Hot Stories, take a look at the photograph, Deep Impact, photographing Comet Temple 1. That comet, of course, they will rendezvous on July 4th, where a probe will be released from the Deep Impact mothership, and it will hit the comet, carving a crater and kicking up enough dust that the researchers say the event would be visible to backyard stargazers with binoculars or small telescopes. Seasoned sky watchers might even spot the comet with the naked eye as it brightens temporarily. They want to just check out some of the things on comets. And as we have talked about over the last few days, Saturn's moon Titan is turning out to be a living laboratory that could provide insight on Earth, say scientists who have discovered a complex brew of organic compounds brimming in the upper atmosphere. In a moment, we'll talk to our guest, Richard C. Hoagland, trying to get Richard's take on all of this. Richard C. Hoagland is the founder and principal investigator of the Enterprise Mission, which is a public policy and research group, and that may have been investigating the scientific possibility of intelligently designed extraterrestrial artifacts across the solar system for years. Richard has previously served as the museum curator of astronomy and space science. He was a science advisor to Walter Cronkite at CBS News and the head of special projects at New York's Hayden Planetarium and NASA consultant to the Goddard Space Flight Center. In addition, the 60-year-old Richard is the author of The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever, and winner of the Engstrom Medal for Excellence. Notice how I stress that word, the 60-year-old Richard C. Hoagland. Richard?
Yes, George, I did.
How are you?
Feeling older.
Nah, not you. You're going to get younger.
Well, you know, people keep harping on this age thing, you know. When you ask me the other night, do I feel it? Of course not. There's too much extraordinary stuff going on, and I plan to stick around to be a thorn in the side of a lot of people for a very long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, Richard, you talk about extraordinary things. Again, what's going on Titan is absolutely remarkable. Have you had a chance to really digest this one? I know I called you very late on this.
Well, I actually had a preview. A certain friend of mine slipped me a news story, and I've been trying to research it, and there's a mystery, George. We have got a mission at Saturn, a four-year mission, Cassini, ostensibly looking heavily into pre-biology on Titan, in the atmosphere of Titan, et cetera, et cetera. If you go to the main JPL website for the Cassini mission and you try to find out what they found on the 16th, you can't find a damn thing.
Why not?
I don't know. It's like it's a big secret. We pay for it, and it's another damn secret that they won't tell us. I mean, I'm being very serious. I thought I would kind of do a little brush-up, and I would be able to, you know, trip off the tip of my tongue a whole bunch of very complex names of organic molecules that Cassini had sniffed out of the atmosphere a couple weeks ago when it flew by. They don't mention one. They have one graph which shows a kind of a bar chart showing the atomic mass units, or Daltons, of the weight of the molecules that they found, but they don't name them. They don't specify them. They are being incredibly weird, and I think I know why.
Tell me why.
I think they're waiting for the papers because they think they have made some real history. They think they're going to get, somebody thinks they're going to get a Nobel Prize for this, because my strong suspicion is that somebody in the mainstream, maybe Toby Owen, my old friend from Mars, the Viking days.
Yes, yes.
Toby is on the Cassini science team. Toby happened to also be the guy who found the face on Mars, okay? And he's still working for NASA, by the way, folks. I just thought to let you know that.
yeah, they didn't let him go, huh?
They did not let him go, no. He has been very bullish on the idea that Titan has marvelous organic surprises. Well, the biggest surprise of all, George, would be if these guys think they have now found the signatures of an actual current living life process on Titan. And the reason they're not giving out any of the names of the molecules is because every biologist on the planet, if they did, would know the game was up.
This is so exciting. I
got
to tell you.
It is so cool because, I mean, it's really cool. It's 300 below zero. And when they flew Cassini, remember, there were two spacecraft as part of this mission. It's called Cassini-Huygens for a reason. The Huygens spacecraft, which was kind of dropped off and flew into Titan last January, was a lander. You know, it came down on a parachute, spent a couple hours on the surface beaming back information, and it was supposed to sample in situ the composition of the atmosphere and the surface gunk, the organics that everybody thought who's in this game have been raining down on Titan for billions and billions of years, as Carl would say. Well, Cassini, of course, is still in orbit around Saturn, and every few weeks it does a deliberate flyby. It's now on its 39th intended flyby. That's got number three or number, I guess number four under its belt. And every time they do that, they can target a little different approach and a little different distance. So this one came within 637 miles of the surface, meaning that the spacecraft actually flew through the upper fluffy part of the atmosphere that Titan has extending into space. And it has on board a device called an ion and gas chromatographer. Which means it can sample molecules, and basically it's like your nose. It can tell what the various compositions are by what the gases smell like, which is a kind of a crude way of talking about analyzing material by remote sensing. Anyway, it sent back this data stream a few days after the flyby that the upper atmosphere of Titan is loaded with all these heavy organics, molecules up to 100 atoms in weight. But they're not telling us what they are. And to me, that is amazingly weird, because normally NASA loves to tell you all these technical terms. They love to make your eyes glaze over with technical terms. And the fact that they're not specifying which molecules they found, to me, means they're holding back a surprise.
Well, I don't know if they're holding back the surprise, Richard, but I tell you, if they are, it's going to be one heck of a story if it's ever released.
Well, as you know, we've been looking heavily at Saturn as part of our, you know, multi-part series on the bizarre moon Iapetus, which is a moon inward from Titan. I'm sorry, outward. And we have part five up there, 4, 3, 2, 1. You know, we can go read them. Go on the link that Lex has put up on the COAST website. Click on Enterprise or go to enterprisemission.com. It's called A Moon with a View. It's at the top of the Enterprise main page. And we're now working on part six. And I must say that I had decided to do something very different for part six that I'm going to do now, partly because of the bizarre events that happened with your guest, Jordan Maxwell, a few days ago.
Very strange. And just to reiterate what happened to him, after he was on the air, he got clipped. His phone got clipped somehow minutes before we were going off with him. And then when we finally got a hold of him, this horrendous story of some hacking attack on his website taking emails and sending them. Has this ever happened to you?
Very low-level stuff compared to this. And I think part of it is because people know that I will not put up with it, and I have a very large megaphone and some very interesting friends in the media, and it would be really kind of dumb and stupid for them to try something like that with us.
Well, and you also, the buttons you push are NASA buttons, I think, and space buttons.
Yep.
Jordan is pushing some other buttons.
Well, we're actually in a very
important way. You're similar.
We're pushing the same buttons because remember who introduced you to Jordan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, back a year ago, February.
Yep.
I marched him over and said, George, meet Jordan, Jordan, meet George, because I wanted you to put him on the show because he has extraordinary information. Jordan is a dear friend, as you know, at the Bay Area conference last fall. I was asked to actually do a kind of a little roast thing.
Sure.
When he was supposedly retiring, which I knew would last about 30 seconds. And we all had a lot of fun. But Jordan has been into some very serious research in the secret societies, the rituals, the side of NASA that I never knew existed until I kind of took his lead and started looking under certain rocks, and lo and behold, that whole side of the secret society of the space agency that no one seems to want to talk about, you know, I've been working on for years, basically because of Jordan's heads up that there were things in government that were not exactly as they seemed on these areas.
Well, this is a nightmare for him right now, Richard. As you know, we read a statement that he was so glad we read last night.
Well, I want to come to his defense because he is an incredible scholar. He is a good friend. He does not deserve what's going on. And frankly, George, I think I know what the problem is. Because you spent most of that show with him, which, by the way, was one of the best shows I've ever heard Jordan do. And I think a lot of the credit goes to the guy who was talking to him, interviewing him, because you really pulled out some really cool stuff. And he was right there, click, 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 with specifics and, you know, projections and limbing out possibilities that most people never even imagine could be going on in this society. But the constant theme of the entire evening was Saturn.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, do you remember what happened to me a couple, 3 weeks ago when I did my last show on Saturn?
Yes, I sent you that email, right?
You sent me an email that you got. Please tell everybody who might not have heard what happened.
That email came in to me at Coast to Coast, and it wasn't as if the emailer was threatening Richard. It was almost as if the emailer knew if Richard continued down the road he was continuing, he was going to get into some physical trouble. And I sent that straight on to you, Richard, because I have an obligation to do that. Whether it's a hoax or it's real, you need to know about it. And off it went.
Well, I was very appreciative, and as you know, I recommended that you read it on the air, and you did.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly thank you for that. The reason being that these cockroaches scurry away if you shine the bright light of day on them, which is why I wanted to bring very sharp focus on what's going on with Jordan, because I believe it is connected. What that email, that threatening email, which I do agree with you that it was someone that was like a friend of the court, someone trying to give us a heads up,
yes,
was warning me through you not to keep delving into Saturn. Jordan was doing and is doing the same thing. We're looking at the same set of dots. We're connecting the same set of images, events on Earth, preoccupation of the space agency with this distant place, things that don't quite make sense, like coming out with a story about all kinds of neat stuff on Titan, but not telling anybody the specifics of the neat stuff you found on Titan.
Now, what though would be so earth-shaking to threaten Jordan, to threaten you?
The connection to Earth, the connection to our deep, deep ancient history, the connection to certain secret groups that have kind of held the candle flame burning all these millennia, mm-hmm. that believe they have sacred, secret knowledge that puts them above all the rest of us, that makes them our controllers, which is how they basically view themselves. I have another colleague who is very well versed in the secret society arena, and he told me a couple days ago, in fact he's listening tonight, that there are two very high level lodges, that was the term he used, lodges, which have very dark and dank sides that are deeply involved with a Saturn cult, a Saturn set of mysteries. So I think that Gordon and I have gotten caught up in something. Now, I'm going to get to the bottom of it, because as you know,
hold on.
I do not give up.
All right. No, you don't. You're like Alex Jones in one respect. You're another bulldog. Richard C. Hoagland. We'll be back in a moment with him, enterprisemission.com on Coast to Coast AM.
Talk with George Norrie. Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
A few more days, and that's it for me talking about this After Dark CD, a double CD where you get great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, real calls to the program over the years, and some ghost stories. You can order by going to AfterDarkCD.com. Take advantage of a collector's item. It won't come back until closer to the holidays. Or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. So it's 1-800-598-2331, or the website, AfterDarkCD.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Richard C. Hoagland. A little bit later on this half hour, we'll take a few of your phone calls as well. Richard, if Titan were closer, you know, maybe like where Mars is, what do you think be going on that moon right now, which then it would probably be a planet?
Well, the problem is, if it were closer, it couldn't have formed the way it formed, because it's made of a lot of volatiles, ices that are boiling off, and that's the mainstream view of why it has a fluffy atmosphere. It's the only moon in the solar system. It's bigger than Mercury, actually. Not Mercury, of Ganymede, the large moon at Jupiter. But it's the only moon in the solar system that has an atmosphere, certainly this dense. And I was thinking, you know, one of the possibilities for life on Titan, as amazing as that sounds, is that it's not on the surface at all. Remember Carl Sagan's ideas for floating life in the atmospheres of Jupiter many years ago?
No.
He actually, you know, created a whole almost environmental scenario for formation of small things and bigger things and bigger things, and finally a whole ecosystem that would be living above the cloud decks of Jupiter, because if it plunged below, it would be incinerated by the high temperatures in the lower atmosphere. But he had huge, you know, flying things.
Oh, like jellyfish that would fly up there.
Jellyfish,
yeah,
in the atmosphere of Jupiter. Well, remember, the Titan gravity is only a few tenths that of Earth. And yet it has this incredibly dense atmosphere, almost twice as dense as the Earth's atmosphere. So you could have, potentially, that kind of mini ecosystem in the atmosphere of Titan. If it ever got going where it was up high, where it could get sunlight, you could have structures literally miles across because of the low gravity that would soak up sunlight, you know, be chemical factories, create all kinds of complex hydrocarbons, fuel a whole biological, you know, system, and spew out waste byproducts, and yet you would never see any of this on any telescope because they'd just be dots against the huge planet background from the Earth. Even on Cassini images, unless they were big and moving relatively fast, you wouldn't see them, but they could be there. So someday, you know, in the not-too-distant future, when we have actual missions to Titan that put balloons in the atmosphere and float around for weeks and months at a time with cameras and sensors and all that, who knows what we could find? Because I'm telling you, George, they're not acting on the up-and-up regarding this new news. They're hiding exactly the kinds of organics.
I was in San Francisco Sunday. It was just a packed day for me, Richard, and my speech was based on Walter Sullivan's book, We Are Not Alone.
Classic book.
And let me tell you, you know, when I was looking at the possibilities of star systems, you know, 10 billion star systems in one galaxy, 10 billion galaxies, 100 billion possible star systems, it's incredible.
More grains of sand, more numbers to more grains of sand than all the beaches of the world, as we used to say.
Velikovsky wrote in his book, Worlds in Collision, and he had an interesting theory. I want your take on this before we get some of these callers as they're lining up for you. Mercury, no moon. Venus, no moon. Earth, one moon. Mars, two little cruddy things that really aren't moons, I don't think. and then all of a sudden, the other planets, the Jupiters, the Saturns, all of them, they've got a countless amount of moons. Why is there such a disparity between the inner planets and the outer planets?
Well, I think it has to do with composition. Remember, the solar system is basically two solar systems in one. You've got the inner planets that are rocky, solid, metals, you know, rock, stuff like that. And then you have the outer planets that are made of hydrogen, helium, you know, lots and lots of carbon, silicon, oxygen, nitrogen, much lighter elements. And that the reason that disparity exists is because the universe is composed primarily of hydrogen and helium and then a trace of everything else. And because of the heat of the sun, the mainstream model is that the refractory stuff, the high temperature stuff, the metals, the rocks, they condensed out near the sun, so you form planets and moons that are made of that kind of stuff close in. And farther out, you have elements that are much more representative of the far more abundant elements of the universe, where they can condense out at much lower temperatures, and there's just a lot more mass out there to form a lot more stuff, including satellites and moons and rings and things like that. So that's not really the mystery. The mystery is why, after billions and billions of years, as you know, Carl would say, does Titan still have this incredible atmosphere, and why does it now have organic? Remember, the temperature is so cold out there, George, that all these organic molecules formed by the sun, which is the mainstream model, should have basically fallen out like rain and be covering the surface. There were some ideas, you know, put forth before Cassini got there, that we would find miles deep organic goo and sludge and crud all over the surface of Titan from this constant rain of stuff. Well, you've seen the Huygens picture.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
We're looking at an early Earth. That's what we're looking
at. That's what they say. You know, remember, that's what they say. That's not necessarily what it is.
Are you saying we're looking at an Earth now?
Well, you could be looking at a variant of an Earth. You know, Earth is kind of a narrow perspective. I'm saying that everybody has been talking that Titan is the preview window. Titan is the kind of frozen time capsule that shows us what Earth was like a long, long time ago. But that's not true. The temperatures are much too cold. Earth's atmosphere and surface temperatures were never minus 300 below zero, as far as we know from studies of rocks and, you know, little uranite crystals and stuff like that. We have always had flowing water on the Earth. Well, water freezes at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, all right? The temperature on Titan is 300 degrees colder than that Fahrenheit. So you're not having liquid water. Whatever is doing the kind of, you know, chemical equivalent of water there, it ain't water.
No, that's
so
true.
So it can't even be looked at as a pre-Earth. It has to be looked at as its own unique place. And I'm telling you, George, I am getting more and more bullish on the idea that they have tripped over the chemical signatures, like the methane on Mars that they're not admitting is being emitted by Mars bugs yet, that they have tripped over the chemical organic signatures in Titan's atmosphere, indicating to somebody that there's a Nobel Prize down the line for finding life on Titan.
That's exciting. It's all over the solar system. Wildcard line, you're on with the birthday boy, Richard Hoagland. Hi there.
Hi. I have two quick questions, and I'd like to wish Richard happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Great.
Robin in Lake Tahoe, and I'd like to ask him in his heart of hearts, Richard, what would you hope that they find, or what do you feel deeply they'll find? And the other thing is, I wanted you to comment on the conference that you spoke about earlier, if you're still planning on having that, and I'll get off the line while you answer.
Okay, and when you say hope to find, you're talking about on Titan?
Yes,
Robin?
In his heart, yeah, in his gut. What he really, really hopes in his heart of hearts that'll be found. There.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to devote part six to this, of the IAPITA series, and I gave a little preview at the end of part five, or was it part four? I forget.
It was part five, I think.
Where I talked about Titan was not matching the pre-terrestrial, pre-Cassini models. I think Titan is an incredible surprise just waiting to be exploded over the solar system by NASA, just like Mars is, just like the moon, you know, should be. In my heart of heart, I think we're going to find that Titan was terraformed, that somebody did something to Titan to make a place for life in the outer solar system equivalent to our place here in the inner solar system. And in part six, I'm going to not only talk about that, I'm also going to weave the story together with this bizarre place, Iapetus, which looks like a Death Star. It looks like a manufactured object. You know, it's got all kinds of important numbers written all over it. If you go and look at the series on the Enterprise website, you'll just see all those. And the bottom line is, I think there is a reason, George, why Jordan and I are being attacked over asking questions about Saturn. And it has to do with the secrets in Saturn the Saturn system holds that are held very preciously and closely by a very tiny minority here on Earth, and somebody doesn't want us asking those questions.
Good point. And what about your conference? Still in Seattle?
Actually, no. We have decided we're gonna change venues and we're gonna refocus it. And I can't go into details now, but this is a conference that was going to be held in September.
Okay.
The 2012 conference.
It turns out there's such an
interest in this. I think I'm talking to somebody who has a casual interest in 2012.
Yes.
we're going to do something even more special than we planned originally, and as soon as we get our act together, and I'll say that very candidly, I will let you know, and George, you will be probably one of the first to know.
All right. Very good. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi there.
Hi, Jordan. Richard, how you doing?
Welcome. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wilmington, Delaware.
Great. Good to have you on the program. Go ahead.
All right. I wanted to ask Richard if he thinks that if his theory is that Saturn actually may have housed the secret society or race or maybe subhuman race that actually may be running the secret society and that they're trying to maybe prevent from discovering that that's their planet where they're from and there's life there.
I don't think they were from Saturn originally. I mean, I put in part five a kind of a scenario for what happened in the solar system millions of years ago when, you know, the Planet 5 blew up and Mars was released into its own orbit, and refugees had to stream all over the place to try to get away and stay alive. And some of them may have gone to the Saturn system because it was far enough out that it wouldn't have been damaged a lot by what was going on at Mars. And some of them came here. And, you know, this is all part of the book, the follow-on to The Monuments of Mars, that someday I will get a chance to finish. But I'm going to put out some of this material because it's of its timeliness in the form of this series in terms of Iapetus. But I do think you're right that there's something critical about Saturn, Saturn in mythology, Saturn in secret societies, Saturn in myth, Saturn in the heart of a... Let me give you one vivid example. When John Kennedy announced that we were going to go to the moon, he needed a big amount of rocket power to do it, right, George?
Yes.
Okay. What did Wernher von Braun, who had just come from Nazi Germany, who was a SS lieutenant in Hitler's army, what did Wernher von Braun lay on Kennedy's desk as the way we would get to the moon already fully formed?
Well, I don't know.
The plans for the Saturn V.
Did he?
Why was it called Saturn?
Well, that's a good point. You know, even one of my guests, Riley Martin, who has a far-fetched story of how he gets picked up in an alien craft, beamed aboard, guess where they take him?
Saturn.
Yeah.
Why is Tolkien the most extraordinary writer? Why did Lord of the Rings win every damn award there is out there?
Saturn.
Why is there this incredible interest in this place? By the way, Saturn, physically, as a physical place, is kind of impossible by any mainstream theories. Its magnetic field is precisely aligned with its rotational spin axis. We found that out, you know, 25 years ago when Voyager went by. Saturn has a lot of mysteries, and the biggest may be some deep connection to what Jordan was bluntly telling you the other night, secret societies, which are up to and included, involved, George, perhaps, with the Vatican itself.
That is very possible. Next up, west of the Rockies, your turn. Hi there.
Yes, hello, George.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name is Al from Fairbanks.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just, hi, Richard.
Hi there.
Yes, I was, you just happened to touch on what I was going to talk about with that Riley Martin, about the Cassini spacecraft photographing that ship that he was taking.
I don't know if it was that ship, Al, but it was a strange picture. I'll give you that.
Well, yeah, it sure was. What do you think about that? What's your opinion on that?
And, Richard, you know which one we're talking about? Cassini took a picture of what some have thought was maybe one of Saturn's moons in the background,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't look big enough to be one of the moons.
No.
I don't know what it is.
I don't either, and I have got to tell you, I have not had time to go through all of the images that are being placed on the NASA websites. There's just too much to do, and there's not enough of us to do it. But I've seen that picture, and it's got to be as... You know, what's his name says in my kind of gray box?
Yep. Hey, make sure I get a minute to tell you about my David Wilcox story up in San Francisco, by the way.
Okay.
Before we're off with you. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mary from Springfield, Missouri.
Hello, Mary. Go ahead.
Hello, fellas. I want to ask you about Sunday night. I was listening to ABC Radio News, and they announced that there had been sightings of lights over Connecticut. That dozens of people had called the authorities. And the authorities reported that it was a meteor shower. Richard, is that possible? I mean, don't we usually know about meteor showers a little bit before they suddenly explode in the sky?
Some we do, some we don't.
Have you fellas heard about this? What happened over Connecticut this
yes.
weekend?
Yes, oh, yeah, it was all over the eastern part of the northern hemisphere. That's part of the story I just had to lead the hour where one theorist believes that we and the Russians blew up an asteroid, and that's what they saw, pieces of the debris coming back down. Who
yeah,
knows?
I heard that story. I don't put much credence in that. There are additional meteor showers we run into from time to time because, remember, things are always in flux and motion out there. And if you have a comet which, you know, burps and puts out gas and dust, and then we run into the trailing debris halfway around the solar system, it can cause a flurry of bright objects entering the atmosphere. Doesn't mean it's, you know, dangerous, and it doesn't mean that someone's not telling us. It just means that nature sometimes is unpredictable.
And this weekend we did have the Lyrid meteor shower.
So, yes.
You know, could have been that. Hey, thanks for your story. Hey, very quickly, we may have time for another call, but let me tell you about David, of course, when we met him in San Jose at the expo where you were at. I was with Tom, and we were having lunch, and we had to get going to get a plane. And
you stiffed him with a check.
We stiffed him with a check. So when we were doing the pre-interview with him about this coming conference that we were at this weekend, David brought it up on the air. I'll get him for that. But I offered to buy him lunch when I saw him. Okay. So we fly in on Sunday. We're checking in, and who's the first person we run into? Now, keep in mind, on the plane, Tom and I are talking about, do we really have to buy David lunch? I mean, we beat him the last time. So we, synchronicity as it is, we run right into David at the hotel.
Of course.
And all I had to invite him to lunch, right?
Right.
This is how the man upstairs takes care of me, Richard. David says, God, I'm starved, George. This is great. And I didn't think you'd come through. And I said, David, don't ever doubt me. So we begin to walk into the restaurant of the hotel, and it's closed.
Oh.
There's nothing open. They don't have room service. Nothing.
Oh.
And David's getting late because he's got his presentation. We got out of there again, and we had meetings all night. We got out of there and never bought him anything.
Oh, you do live a charmed life.
One quick last call. You're on Coast to Coast, east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
My name is Dave. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and I have a quick question for Mr. Hogan.
Sure thing, Dave. Go.
Do you feel that the moon is naturally formed of the Earth, or it was placed here eons ago?
I think it was placed here.
By?
Philemon 11. By somebody. I can't get into it because we have no time tonight.
You really believe the moon was just pulled in, huh?
Well, there's a tremendously interesting story, George, and someday we should probably devote 4 hours, and I will regale you with the details.
And I wouldn't mind getting Ingo Swann on with
That'd
you.
That'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be something?
Now, before we leave, let me tell you something.
30 seconds.
I have a surprise for you.
You do?
In concert with some colleagues of mine, we have the most amazing surprise. We're going to have it sent to you, and then I'll talk about it. But I can't tell you anything more than everybody, including you, George, are going to be blown away by what is being prepared.
All right. I'll tell you what. You email me the time you're going to do this, and okay. I'll give you the address I'll be at that time. Okay?
Excellent.
All right. Great. RichardEnterpriseMission.com. Always kept it. You keep it updated. And, again, have a great week. Happy birthday once again. 60 years old, my friend.
And I want you to know, Jordan, that we are on your side. We're not letting you alone in this.
Nope. Jordan Maxwell's listening, no doubt. We got to go to lunch with him, too. I hope he doesn't ask David about how I pick up the tab all the time.
Could get around, you know.
That's true. Thanks, Richard.
You too.
Take care. We'll be back in a moment. We're going live to Maurice Cotterell in Europe in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.